Thank you.
This, I think, is the 23rd of August. At least it was when I came in, but you've got time tracks so askew, it's hard to keep track. Over here's a time track that says 1732, and another one says 1495, and so forth. Quite a confusion. You are embarked upon a rather interesting expedition. Very interesting. From a standpoint of plumbing the depths, we have an objective, subjective view of the whole subject of insanity, the whole ready lot. And probability is we're going to have a good use for this technology. I was telling Dick and Jan, this technology arrives in the nick of time. Someplace else in the world, an organization would love to dump anywhere between a few thousand and a million psychos on us that we are supposed to care for and straighten out. Nothing fixed about it, but it's heading in that direction. When you speak about intentions being followed, why, you'll see in book one that institutional Dianetics was under research. Well, this is an interesting fact. Let's see. Tracking back to Bedlam and other areas of insanity study, bringing it on up along the line to present time. Well, you can go back further, Asclepian, the Asclepians of Greece, so forth. They've been looking at it. Other people have been trying to find out what this is all about for a few thousand years, or maybe a few million years, so I want you to forgive me because it took 10. Apparently, this is a wrapped-up subject. It's about time that a Scientologist was able to recognize, with a few elementary steps, the difference between a psycho and a sane person. That would be a very good piece of information, wouldn't it? And you could stop going around saying this fellow's sane, that fellow's insane, and so forth, and hoping you're right, or something of the sort. Now, in view of the fact, increasingly, the opinion of Scientologists will be sought on the subject of insanity, it'd be a very good thing not to follow in the track of our learned forebears and get into that well-known disease, pomposus, by talking through our ruddy ats and making a guess and looking wise. Don't bother to look wise. You never have to look wise if you know. And you can jettison the trimmings if you've got the gin. And I think we're in that very enviable position right this minute. With relatively elementary testing, I think it is now possible to detect a psycho. And with hunt and punch, sort of auditing on an institutionalized basis. You know, you all got them there. They're being cared for and so forth. When I say hunt and punch, it's just ward visit sort of thing, you know, going around talking to them. Hardly auditing. I'm actually putting them in session about the time they arrive in the building and taking them out when they leave, you know. Why, you could probably get pretty much all of them sane over a period of time without spending very much time on any one of them. Now, that would be a very interesting state of affairs to be in. Basically, there's so many things go awry with psychos, and they have to be incarcerated and looked after so carefully that for anyone as an auditor to pick up and take on a psycho on a standpoint of intensives or something of this sort is folly. It's just folly. It's just a waste of auditor, that's all. Because the guy goes up and down and back and forth and around in circles and into vol planes and spins, and he's sick one day and well the next day, and somebody, he passes a corner and a cat sneezes and he's got a PTP. Just it doesn't take anything to give him a present time problem. And it'd frankly be a tremendous waste of Scientologists to tack the thing on a program line that required very much time per person. There are various things can be done for a psycho. The first thing is rest and food. Get him out of an interbulated environment and get him where he's calm and where he is looked after and where he can get some rest. Don't try to fill him up full of sedatives. Don't try to do anything very weird or wonderful for him, except perhaps some B1. And you know, if you give somebody some B1, you got to give him some calcium and ascorbic acid. Go along with it. Otherwise, you'll take the teeth out of his head and the bones out of his body. The great, that's spelled GRAYAYAYAYAYT, drug firms purveying this stuff by the carload lot. They are learned forebearers. Gave it by the quart, gallon, tank car load to psychos and so forth, and it was actually quite dangerous, this stuff called B1. But only dangerous to the degree that it demanded from the system that certain other chemicals be present. And B1 has to be administered with calcium and ascorbic acid. Actually, the formula is 250 milligrams of ascorbic acid and a minimum of 15 grains of calcium, preferably something like dicalcium phosphate, to 100 milligrams of B1. Now, that dosage will hold, and any proportions of the dosage will hold, and if you do that, you can give them up to, 500 or 1,000. You can give them B-complex if you want to, but most B-complexes have niacinamide in it, and that makes it run radiation off. Nicotinic acid runs off radiation. You don't want to be bothering with that, so don't bother with a B-complex. Now, that's just a little side note in case we lose it. We mustn't lose that one. Because in the treating of psychosis, about the only thing you can do is shoot somebody with some B1, give him some rest, make sure he gets something to eat. In order to do that, you got to put him in an institutional-type surroundings. And then you got to have attendants that don't beat him around or try to run any HC on him. You got the idea? They don't try to do anything for him. Just knock it off. Knock it off. Get in with a fire hose sometime or another and clean out the cell. You get the idea? Because psychos are very often that sloppy. And clean them up, take care of them. And then, along with rest, why give them some open spaces, not too open, not too big, to sit around in and look at still objects. That's a little trick, which is an interesting trick. Put up some masses, you know, big statue or something. Not with water jumping all over it, you know, or anything like that, but just it's just still. They can go out and they see these great big still objects. I don't care what they look like. The less significant they are, the better. You know, a rock with a blob on it. Anything. Modern sculpturing. It does something for psychos. Now, that's about as far as you can go. That's about as far as you can go as far as treatment's concerned. If you did just that, you'd get a certain number of recoveries, because the only thing that's really wrong with a psycho is he's tired out. I mean, physically. Physically, that's what's wrong with the cycle. Now, our learned forebears didn't know whether it was mental or chemical, physical or octagonal. And they're spending enormous quantities of their advertising funds right now in telling people they don't know, which is pretty good. At last, they have cued and aided with the truth. Somehow or another, the truth was out there in front of them all the time in vital form of vital statistics. When they treated a psycho, the psycho left the institution 3 to 6 weeks later than he would have left it if he were not treated. That's something to remember. So if you wanted to shake a government down for a great deal more money in the care and housing of psychos, you would, of course, treat them with these treatments that left them in there for another 3 to 6 weeks longer. Right? Electric shock, metrazole, chemical squirts in the gluteal maximus. This is balderdash, that's all. Little B1's about as far as you could go. Rest and some food and a non-interrogative environment, which includes keeping off of them attendants who have a penchant for beating up psychos. There are lots of such attendants in institutions. Keeping away the surgeons on the idea that psychosis is carried on the genetic line, they quite ordinarily sterilize them these days. Yeah, it's just a brutalized mess. Keep the men and the women segregated and so forth. It'll all go along fairly well. Providing you know what's wrong with them, and providing you know what you're trying to do, those would be the fundamental steps which you would take in any event. In any event. Well, you could do other things as they tended to get better. Well, you could teach one or two of them how to do group processing or something of this sort and make them take groups of psychos and work with them. Group processing would work into this one way or the other, providing it was PAB 114 type group processing and nothing else. Now, this brings us back to the original statement here of psychosis. What is it? What is it all about? Is it some strange, different mechanism? No. No. There is no such thing as psychosis. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Every one of you, and me too, has got the total symptoms. If there is such a thing as psychosis, it's simply the liability of being alive and having a memory, or not having one. So you can stop worrying about whether you're crazy or not. You are. The mere fact that you don't know who you were a few lifetimes ago, that proves you're nuts. That's it. You owe something to that. Very early in this lifetime, I couldn't put my finger on who I was. I was just a little boy at the time, and I was thinking of myself kind of as a little boy, and this was very goofy, only I knew it was goofy. And I knew I couldn't remember here and there on the track where I'd been or what I'd done. I couldn't remember where I'd just come from. I knew I'd just come from somewhere. And it wasn't a vague feeling. I knew I was nuts. I said, well, I've had it. I've had it. I can't tell you a darn thing about what I was doing 20, 30 years ago. So I got interested. I said, well, what do you know? You come on down along this line, and sooner or later you get into enough jams and actions of one character or another. It's the first time I'd ever realized it. A person can actually begin to experience amnesia. And proved it to me. So I sort of rolled up my sleeves when I was over in India and other sunny climes in my teens and so on. I kept my eyes open and listened to what the magician said. And I just wondered if anything was known about it here on Earth, basically. And I found out they didn't know anything about it. Studied under one of the top psychoanalysts next to Freud, Commander Thompson. He didn't know what it was all about. They were so obsessed with the fact that there was a specialized case, apparently, here, of somebody who had a specialized thing happen to him. They look for a specialized answer to a specialized person, don't you see? On the assumption that everybody was sane, except a few unlucky goofs. Well, that's about what it amounted to. And coming up the line, doing research of a much more intensive nature, and started wrapping this around and finding the bits and pieces and putting the mechanics back together again, not particularly because I was in bad shape, but I had found out that we had a pretended zone of knowledge. And that pretended zone of knowledge was that there were people who pretended to know what human beings were all about who themselves did not know. That was what drove me on rather than anything else. I found a raving case of pomposus in the society. And I can always be counted upon to attack that. Anyway, and then run it out afterwards so that I don't myself fall into the trap. The basics of this problem have always been with us, and they've always been observable. And a very, very little institutional experience leads a person almost at once into some erroneous conclusions. The difference of action on the part of psychotics from psychotic to psychotic is so bizarre, and the cases basically, if you're interested in such things, are so basically interesting, and their differences are so great, there doesn't appear to be a common denominator until you know about engrams. And as soon as you know about engrams, well, you see them playing off these engrams, and they play them off either once a day or once a week or once a month. They'll play off this engram, you see, and it'll go through, blah, 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 and it'll finish up to the end, and that's the end of the thing. Now, that's a dramatizing psychotic, and the other one is a computing psychotic. And the computing psychotic, of course, doesn't have an engram in restimulation, but a circuit. And the circuit becomes totally active and totally apparent. So actually what you're looking at is simply the raw meat of an engram running off full play, which looks bizarre because the fellow is not in 17th century France, you see. And so it violates the observer's reality, don't you see? And the other fellow, you're watching one of these great computing machines they are now using to figure out all future, all strategy, and all civilization with. You're just watching one of these things just fire on its own determinism, see? It's just running off. It's a circuit. It's a circuit or a machine of some kind or another. And it's got all of its bits and pieces wrong because it's running without responsibility for where the fellow is or what he's doing. So it's busy computing answers as to how to avoid sharks and squids. And that's all it does. And the fellow works on these and puts them into action. He puts these solutions, how to avoid sharks and squids, into action, and he puts them into action perpetually and continually, and they're different from day to day, of course, because they're different solutions. And, of course, the only thing wrong with him is he isn't being attacked by sharks and squids. He happens to be sitting there all by himself. Makes a rather bizarre activity. But, you know, once you know about an engram, and once you know about a circuit or something like this, and you see these things in full play, at once the inmates of sanitariums and so on become very comprehensible. Of course, you have to study one, watch one for several days before you get the track of what this is all about. For instance, I had the amusing experience one time of watching an engram run off on a dramatizing psychotic and then found out who'd driven her crazy. I just took it down till I got the total text. It took several visits, several days, and so forth. And then had the chair of a department of psychology of a university dismissed from post. It was an implant. a pain drug implant. She had been beaten. And now these things can run off forever if there's no determinism connected with them. See, there's nothing varying the determinism. It isn't true that a person running through an engram without any determinism, without any auditor, will run out the engram. If there's no determinism present, the engram just persists. Now, when you start adding the determinism, even if you were to walk in on this person every morning on your wards or rounds and simply say to the person, "Go through that again." "Good, thank you." Whatever the person was doing, why, perhaps in a course might take months, but finally, why, this dramatizing psycho would have some kind of a bite on this engram, don't you think? If you just did that and did nothing else. As far as circuitry psychos are concerned, they're much harder to reach because a circuit is a more difficult thing to handle, as you find out in cases. This basically responds ordinarily to havingness and once more to any kind of a light touch as far as a ward visit would be concerned. Such a person, if you merely said hello to him, tone 40-wise, every time you saw him, would tend to change or break up. A little communication is about all that you would do along this particular line. Now, we haven't gotten down to what's the basic of what's wrong with these people. I just started talking about these people. There is one common denominator to psychosis. It isn't help, because psychotics can still help as long as they do the help. And of course, it isn't really very good help. But as long as they do it, they don't want to receive any, but that they can do it obsessively in some kind of a knuckle-headed fashion. It's very interesting to have a psychotic insisting that you need, at the moment you're digging, a spade. And you happen to be digging with a trowel and getting along perfectly fine, and this fellow will help you out by giving you a spade. And he keeps giving you a spade in numerous peculiar ways and so forth. But it's his idea of helping. Now, help becomes betrayal on a circuitry case, so the best way for a Hitler to help Germany is to get everybody killed. But it's still help. It's a betrayal. He knows what's best for them, just like the atomic scientists today knows what's best for the world. We should all be dead. But here is the crux of the situation. It isn't help. It isn't help. What's your precession? Help? Control? Communication? Interest? It's control. When the control button is gone, missing on the case, and absent, you have a psycho. Got it? That's a real psycho. The other guy is just kind of difficult to get along with. Got the idea? It's just as simple as that. When that control button's gone, when the control button is missing, why, he's nuts. Now, that means that anybody who could consistently respond to a request to sit down, or could consistently respond to various instructions of one character or another about this or about that, or who, on their own determinism, or if told to, could give instructions about this or that, so that you could be fairly sure they would do it. You know, and not an absolute certainty, but, you know, just fairly sure they'd do it. You say, go down to the other end of the corridor and pick up the empty bottle down there of the water cooler. Well, the fellow'll do it. You don't have to worry about whether he does it or not. Well, now, if he's in an institution, because he does some peculiar or strange things, he'll sometimes follow orders and sometimes won't. Well, you haven't got, then, a fellow who has a control button, because it's often missing. Got the idea? Well, the fact that it's often missing, you would at once have a feeling like, well, maybe we shouldn't tell him to go down to the end of the corridor and pick up the empty water bottle down there. See? You can say, well, I wonder if he's going to do it or not. Well, that's enough out, don't you see, so that dealing with institutional psychosis, well, you would say, well, he's still nuts. He'd have to give some evidence of continuous trustworthiness in carrying out instructions. That's the button that's gone. Control. Now, he's probably not a bad case if he can carry out orders like gardening or something like this out in the yard. He probably shouldn't be anywhere near an institution. Somebody comes around and tells you, this is a very bad fellow. He rapes policemen or something. It's kind of occasion. What do? Go to church? You know, this whole society has gotten terribly, terribly critical of behavior. It's hypercritical of behavior right now. It doesn't police anymore for crimes. You probably go out here and machine gun down people and murder people and so forth, and they'd look at you and say, he's a great political figure. They wouldn't do anything to you. But you go out here and do something, consider that is antisocial behavior. Is not killing people or mopping them up, but is perhaps not wearing enough clothes as you walk down the road, or talking to the wrong political person. That'd be very bad. In fact, I know several nations on the face of Earth that all you would have to do is go around and argue with a communist for a little while, trying to argue him into something else, and you would at once have enemy color. At once, you'd simply be observed and labeled and anything of the sort. In other words, they're punishing what? They're punishing communication. They're punishing behavior. They're punishing things of that character. Not actual action. So one has to safeguard against this in diagnosis. She's crazy because she sits and cries and says, I'm no good as a husband. So you say to the girl, all right, come over here. Sit down. What do you think about the situation? Here's your trick. She got up and walked over and sat down. Blows the diagnosis. If this case is a borderline case, you'd say, well, it's merely neurotic, at best. You know, neurotic would be somebody that was worried or something like this. Well, lots of people are worried. But she did get up, she did walk over, she did sit down, she did start talking. Skip it. Somebody's throwing you a hooker. He says, well, she says she'll murder the children all the time. I don't know, that's a good thing to threaten a husband with. People all over the society threatening to do this and threatening to do that. You can't police behavior. The second you start policing behavior that is not injurious to other people directly, see, the second you start policing behavior, he's crazy because every few minutes as he walks down the street, he throws back his head and laughs loud and piercingly. I don't know. Maybe the fellow's just heard a speech by Khrushchev. You can't police psychosis on that basis. Now, let me make my point here good and clear. This is going to be a little bit longer lecture, by the way, because I want to cover this subject and wind it right up, okay? You can't police this. And all of our learned forebears have been policing it this way. They're saying the eccentric behavior denotes a psychosis. Watch that one, because that opens the gates wide to political usages of mental therapies. Watch it. This fellow's a psychosis because he believes anarchy is the thing to save the human race. He has a psychosis, obviously. He's crazy, so therefore should be institutionalized. Basically, right now, I don't know and you don't know that anarchy isn't a perfectly good political philosophy, and it's certainly an interesting game. I know if we all of a sudden found ourselves in a totally communist world, that's the one I'd clue you in to press like mad. It'd shatter them. You just start telling them, but you people are too far to the right. And right away they have to do a reversal and come off of their overthrow everything and so forth. But they'd say, but you need a central government and you need discipline and you need a sort of a caste system of authority and you need all these things. You say, I don't know that we need that at all. Actually, it fits in with your philosophy very, very well. You say you don't need that at all if you had nothing but clears. I believe in anarchy. You'd throw them for a complete loop, don't you think? But as such philosophies move in, they try to pick up the opinions of an individual as evidence of psychosis. Behavior, something like that. You'll find the psychiatric textbooks of yesteryear full of this behavior means psychosis. That is all there is in the textbooks. This behavior means psychosis. That is not true. This means that sooner or later, all behaviors could be classified as psychosis. And all our learned forebears were really trying to do was make the other fellow wrong, obsessively. They weren't trying to diagnose anything that was wrong with a society. They were simply trying to make the individual wrong, and it was a mechanism of introversion. They dramatize this all the time. They're saying one out of every one-half people in the world are psychotic. Oh, that's an exaggeration. But that's the direction they're going. It used to be 1 out of 35, then it became 1 out of 15, it's now 1 out of 10. And everybody, according to one of the most learned fellows, is psychotic sometime. I had the pleasure of writing him a letter after that. He read it too. I said, that means, Dr. Menninger, you're nuts. Anyhow, there's a psychosis for fellows who like to eat rose leaves. It's listed as a full-blown psychosis. Guy eats rose leaves, so he's crazy. Get the idea? They don't want anybody to fall out of agreement. And as you move down into the super-socialized stratus, where we're all equal cells or something of the sort, you see everybody's behavior must be exactly the same behavior. What they're trying to make is a lot of ruddy rabbits. And so any behavior which varies from this line must be condemned. Basically, politically, this is really no more than a raid on the world's productivity. They develop a philosophy whereby everybody will produce for nothing without pay. Look it over with that as a common denominator sometimes, some of these new philosophies along this line, you'll find out that it's all the propaganda they put out is totally geared to getting people to work without pay. In other words, contribute for nothing. Stuck line contribution, the whole thing. The workers are all supposed to work for nothing, and they're all supposed to owe their allegiance for nothing, and there's never any return, don't you see? So they have to dream up some return, which is highly esoteric of some kind or another, which has very little to do with the factualness of the situation. They say, well, we're giving you peace or something of this sort. But the worker's labor is bought for nothing. He is never paid by anybody and actually is not permitted to own anything. It just runs a total can't have on the society. Well, along with this comes this condemnation of odd behaviors, so that anybody who acts fairly free and loose-jointed in the society can then be pronounced insane. So in any area where you have a political change occurring, you will have at the same time all psychosis interpreted as behavior. What the fellow does, you see, is the condemnation. That's the don't communicate, you see. And as I say, you read over lists of incipient psychoses and you'll find out that fellow eats rose leaves, therefore he has rose leavitis, which is, everybody knows, a deep and horrible psychosis. As a matter of fact, when you were a kid, why, you undoubtedly ate the leaves of various plants and so on and found some good and some not so good. Well, realize that that is a full-blown psychosis. Now, what it gets down to is if we're all crazy, then the agreed-upon norm is insanity. But then it's the agreed-upon norm so some of us must be nuttier than others, which establishes a brand new zone of psychosis. See, it isn't true that everybody is crazy. It couldn't be true that everybody is crazy. Because craziness is a difference of agreement with the multitude. If everybody is crazy, why then there is no craziness, don't you think? It washes itself out at once. I know it possibly makes you feel a little queasy, my talking about this sort of thing, but if so, why, after I've given you this talk, just think of one person who believes you're sane, and you'll feel better. That's a marvelous one-shot, one-command panacea for this sort of thing. I've seen people just clutch this to their bosoms as though it's the last canteen of water in Arizona. You know? But now look here. If it isn't behavior, and let me make that point very, very clearly. If psychosis is not determined by behavior, which it is not, then it must be determined by something else. Because there must be a common denominator to this sort of thing. And that's determined simply by the ability to give or receive orders. That's all. Now, a person should be able to give orders or receive orders with fair ease. When he can't, he's at it. He's right on the verge of it. Now, if you want a subjective reality on this, think of some past life you've run into. Now, do you know anything about it? Mm-hmm. All right, think of another one you don't know anything about, but you kind of suspect might be there. Got that one? Well, that's catatonia. That's catatonia. You got some vague suspicion of having been alive or being alive in that strata, but you can't remember anything about it. Got it? Now, could that particular area give or receive any orders short of auditing? Could that person now dictate to anybody anything? Could you give that person any orders? All right, that accompanies the loss of memory, and that's all the loss of memory occurs from. No intentions can be received by or given by that person. That person's nuts. Now you just look over what I've said and you'll have a subjective reality, for goodness sakes, on catatonia, which is the worst brand of psychosis there is to handle or treat. That's it. And you've got it. And so have I. Got it? I don't wish to bring up any bank particularly, but I ran into this head on and got a terrific reality on this thing. Somebody's very amused at the fact that I've made the encyclopedia now and then. coming up the track, you know, they still talk about it. Well, I had a very smooth life, about 60 years, I sort of remember. Rather calm sort of a life, didn't have much to do with anything. Remembered one point of it rather vividly. And she went and looked it up in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Who was this guy, you know? It was a very calm life. Not that anything happened. Gee, swords, pistols, horses, armies, swapping sides, going crash, political catastrophes, imprisonments, murders, everything going wrong, see? Calm, nothing there. All quiet. Well, I got a subjective reality. Now I know why I was worried when I was a little boy. And I know why you're occasionally worried about it. When I was a little boy, I suddenly realized that I had some identities on the track that were in a state of total catatonia. They just wouldn't receive any orders, and they wouldn't give any orders, and they were just dead, and I couldn't even remember them, and there was no contact with them, and they were detached, and they weren't me anymore, don't you see? Terrific individuation had been starting in, and I got a reality on the thing that a guy could go down the dwindling spiral somewhat. So I said, well, before we go very far down this dwindling spiral, a lot of these other people around me must be way down the dwindling spiral. Here's a good chance to help somebody out. So I rolled up my hypothetical sleeves and told my dog to be quiet and figured it out. Anyhow. That's all there is to it. Now you can think of an identity of yourself in this lifetime. And you know that identity is still, to some slight degree, capable of giving or taking orders. Slight degree. You can pick up memories of it. There's masses that represent it. There's scenes and that sort of thing, which have something to do with this. Or you can think of that. Well, that's not in a state of catatonia. That's in a state of perfect sanity. You're still being that person, don't you think? Well, now, between the two, other existences go along. Now, some of us look back upon maybe some bizarre period, such as the war, or one or two wars. See? And we look back on this period, and we realize that we were going through or doing this or that, or, you know, and we sort of look at that as being a fantastically active, kind of goofy period. And we don't want to have too much to do with it, usually. We say, well, that's it. And if anybody gets us to talking about it, somehow or another, we can't stop. Got the idea? Well, that's kind of neurotic. Got the idea? It's an identity that we know about, but our main track doesn't quite go through it, you see? The main track kind of comes up to it and then goes over on a right angles and then runs up there and then comes back over onto our main track, you see? And we still try to connect up the before and afterwards. And there's this slot there. And it's a bit active and it's a bit this way and it's a bit that way. And we're not very... It's another individuation, must be somebody else, sort of a thought comes to us occasionally about such a period. See? Yet that wouldn't any more than be a sort of a neurotic aspect. Now, somebody who starts brooding about his childhood and talks all the time about his childhood and how they beat him every day, and then we find out that he was born in a convent, didn't have any parents, and was never beaten, and so forth, guy must be nuts. That's what we immediately think. Well, that's not an accurate statement. It kind of works this way. Can childhood still take any orders? In other words, can you change it? Are the intentions of childhood still effective upon this person in any way? Is childhood giving orders? Well, maybe it's giving orders. But can it take any orders? Or can you change it as an auditor easily or something of that sort? Well, if it's pretty sticky, you've got a nutty area track. Got the idea? That is a nice nutty area track. He can't really remember childhood, you know. And he can't not remember childhood. And yet he is stuck in childhood and talks about childhood. And it's all sort of messed up somehow or another on the subject of childhood. But he can't give or receive any orders from that particular area, but must be taking them obsessively. You get the idea? That C button, control, is so random concerning that immediate area of the bank that you could say, well, all right, he's nuts on the subject. See? It's too random. He all of a sudden looks at you during dinner and says, you know, I never eat any porridge. And that's behavior's one thing. All right, he says, I never eat any porridge. It's okay as long as you're eating porridge. But he never eats any porridge. Well, let's equate this way. Is this somebody's intention that he eats porridge, that he's still fighting? And if so, it's kind of a goofy area. Get the idea? Mm-hmm. Now, when that becomes a present time condition, whereby anything you try to get the person to do is skipped, either he sits leadenly, as in catatonia, or fights it wildly, or does bizarrely something else, you got a psycho. And that makes not one of you nuts. None of you are crazy. That's it. Now, when you think of the person that believes you're not insane, you can think of me. You're not crazy, that's all. You couldn't be. You can not only give orders, but you can receive orders. You can divine intentions, and you yourself can have intentions, and they do take place. You intend to eat supper, and you eat supper. Given the possibility of eating supper, don't you see? There's no nuttiness connected with it. You're not crazy. You wait till you get to looking at psychos, man, and you'll just come off of this behavior kick as a diagnosis of psychosis. You say to this fellow's wife, who has just told you that his wife is crazy, you say, come over here and sit down in the chair. So she goes and sits on the window ledge. Uh-huh. That's enough. That's enough. There she is, and there's the chair, and there you are to talk to her. But just for kicks, let's ask her to do something else. Let's ask her to do something else. And one of the key things would be to hand her a piece of paper and then say, would you please write your name on that and hand it back. She might scribble her name on it in some upside-down fashion, but if she's really nuts, why, of course, she won't hand it back, because that's an order. And an order to surrender is the one thing a psychotic won't do. He won't surrender an object unless it's in just total catatonia and doesn't even know the object is there, don't you see? Now, there's the diagnosis of psychosis. There it is. And that's all there is to it. Of course, the person that's lying there in bed and won't even get up to go to the bathroom, you know, they're just lying there in bed all the time. They're very obviously incapable of receiving or giving orders, right? Very obvious. You go around and you say, get up, and they continue to lie there. Now, one of the ways of getting to these people is, we already know, we had this kind of wrapped up some years ago, but not as a diagnosis, you see, and not as a positive only cure. We'd say, you make that body lie in that bed, thank you. You make that body lie in that bed, thank you. And things happen if you keep this up long enough. Some remarkable things occur, somebody unconscious and so forth. You give me that hand, thank you, and take his hand, you know. He wake up, start stirring around. But if this person were real nuts, when they woke up and found you taking their hand, and that sort of thing, they'd go through a period there of being pretty batty, even if they're just out of an unconsciousness, don't you see? Normally insane, they come up through an unconsciousness, and all of a sudden start fighting you and throwing you off and all that sort of thing. Well, when you try to run CCH1 on somebody, you get tired of giving his hand, and he'll get upset about it and so forth. But when do you consider it's flats? When he's giving you his hand freely, don't you? Well, so you got the CCHs there. But you actually don't need this. You don't need that much battery to fire with. You don't need that much to handle psychosis, because it's simply orders and intentions. Now, any case, if the case were theta clear, would still gain on this process. It's one of those cases where a process starts at the bottom and goes all the way to the top. You're on the main line, because basically what's the matter with somebody who isn't an OT? He says to that table, move. And it doesn't move. In other words, his intention is not followed. So he's nuts. As far as this stuff is concerned, yes, I agree. We're all nuts as far as this stuff is concerned. See? We don't think we can move through it, and we think this about it and that about it and so forth, and it has tremendous command value. You can put a guy in jail and he stays there, the damn fool. You tell him you pile these 5-6 rows of bricks up across a doorway and nobody can move through the doorway, and he believes it and won't move out the doorway. Never occurs to him to tell the bricks to pile themselves up someplace else. Because he knows his intention wouldn't be followed, you see. Well, he's convinced that his intention wouldn't be followed. Convinced utterly. That's one thing he knows. He can't tell a sky to fall. Well, any zone, you know where a person's coming to collision, you say, why don't you get your boss to give you an extra day off so that you can go on this trip? And the fellow says, sir. Well, maybe he's talking out of experience, but what's the matter with his intentions? What's the matter with his postulates? Well, they obviously won't be followed, that's all. He intends to the boss to give him another day off, and the boss won't follow this, even vaguely. Well, you look around, you generally find out the boss is kind of nuts, because bosses usually, if they're sensible at all, they go between two things. They can't have everybody gone all the time. But on the other hand, they can't have everybody sitting there doing nothing all the time, too. Now, in the society at large, why, bosses have usually settled on the second one. It's perfectly all right for people to be there as long as they report to their desks on time. It isn't whether they get anything done or not that has anything to do with it, and you have a government. The government is composed of the largest possible percentage of the population sitting and doing nothing during certain hours so that they can be supported by another section of the population. Modern government definition of. Probably the best possible definition of the biggest possible government, which, of course, would be a socialist or communist government, getting in a political plug. I'm not, by the way, against the communists. I'm going to do a deal. I'm going to make a deal with them to separate out the sane people from the insane people for them. I'm going to do a deal, get a contract going. You know, I once had a contract with Stalin. Do you ever know that? I wouldn't sign it. That's right. This is straight dope. I just wouldn't sign it. They offered me the whole and entirety of Pavlov's laboratories in 1938. This is not just a gag. Offered me $200,000 spot cash in my little old sweaty palm if I would just come to Russia and complete the work of Dianetics in Russia. Because they couldn't tell who would work and who wouldn't work, and they thought I knew. I was saying, I don't know. Thank you very much, Commissar, you know. The crossroads of the world, of course, is such a place as the Explorers Club. The Explorers Club doesn't care whether a fellow is a Presbyterian or a communist. Anybody can belong. And, by the way, all during the war, we kept German officers on the rosters. Didn't post them for not paying their dues. Sounds real peculiar, doesn't it? Didn't post them because the communication line was broken down. And I'm sure that during the course of the war, some of them did pay their dues through Sweden or some such place. And at the end of the war, why, the rosters had to be all straightened out against German combat lists as to who was dead and missing. And the missings, to this day, I don't think, have ever been removed from the rolls. It's quite interesting. The Explorers Club gets superstitious about people being reported missing because that's always happening. So, it was such a crossroads of existence which cared nothing about politics and still doesn't. That such a deal was shot through to me. And my life was kind of miserable afterwards because they tried to steal manuscripts off of me and do other things, and it got to be quite cloak and daggerish. But at least I wasn't behind the Iron Curtain for the rest of my life. Would have been very interesting. I've often wondered what I would have done with those squares and circles Pavlov used to drive dogs nuts with. We could take over, I think, now any insane problem that a society was having and handle it very well, very easily. Our administrative procedure isn't well grooved in, but your processing can be something on this order. You do ward visits, given rest and so forth, given rest and some food. But don't harass them and leave them alone. But on a ward visit, 5-10 minutes each patient each morning on a circuit, where they usually ask them how they're doing and see if they're being fed in any way. What we do is give them a fast process. We hardly open it or close it, don't you think? But we just get them to find some intentions. Find something out about some intentions. See? What they intended to do and didn't. You get the idea? We don't care what we would ask them. It'd have to be something on this intentional button of the basic orders of which you already know. But you'd have to cage it in such a way that it reached the person, you know? And you just discuss this with them. Every time you see them, you discuss this thing with them. They'd start coming up the line because they'd start bucking the intentions that are making them mad. You see this? It sort of wraps up the subject of insanity. I know it does because I've had enough experience with them and around them to know that they would respond to it one way or the other. Of course, help is always an available button with them. If you want to run some HC on them some kind or another, do it in the guise of help. But you better really make sure that they're really helping. That's possible. But this other is feasible. On a long-term gradient scale basis, you'd yank them all out sooner or later if they didn't starve to death or something in the meanwhile. That's practically all there is to the subject. Now, if you look from top to bottom, you find out that this is not a process which is relegated to the psychotic. Anybody's bank is stuck where it is stuck because of dismayed intentions and orders. He is either dismaying the intentions and orders he has been given, which is the basic overt, or he is being dismayed about his own intentions. His intentions and orders he knows won't get any place. And between those two things, you have the basis of the primary louse-ups on the track. So you give this thing ample play in the pre-session area at the point of control in pre-sessioning with the auditing commands or any discussion or variation thereof. And you would improve any case. But I think you have practically the nadir of what you can do for psychosis. And you don't have any psychotics in this class at all. But you do have some cases that are moving slowly on the tone arm. Well, that means they're just in a gummy portion of the bank, and the most gum that you could free up the fastest would, of course, be, naturally, get the orders that are being held so that the cycle of action doesn't complete. The fellow's intentions are being dismayed, so he doesn't complete the cycle of action. Cycles of action are started all over the track, and they're never finished, and therefore a fellow's postulates go wrong, and he'd rather go into energy than to give orders or receive orders or anything else. Now, there's all you need to know about this subject of insanity. With a little experience, you could give your learned forebears cards, spades, and the queen. Let him deal off the bottom of the deck and anything else, and you'd still win. Took them 12 years to teach somebody how to identify behavior, it takes us just exactly 60 minutes to tell you how to do it. Thank you.